Good day, everyone. It's your host, Mappy Davis. It's the Atlanta Podcast. It's Monday the 11th, and the storms are coming. So if you're listening to this on your commute home or commute anywhere, stay safe. I mean, kind of a silly thing to say. Of course, we want you to stay safe. And of course, the news, blah, 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 and do this and do that and keep your furniture in and yada, yada. But whatever, I had to say something. I'm in the office right now. I'm at the Alkaloids. I'm going to put from now on, if I put it at the bottom of the last episode and I want to go back retroactively, put it on the other episodes about the day and place these episodes were recorded versus when they go live. I don't know why. I just think it's kind of interesting. It just kind of puts another Atlanta staple on it. Like, here's where in Atlanta they were. Most of them are here, but some of them we do at people's places of business or other, you know, you just never know. I think we might have some cool, interesting ones. Like, I went to Dragon Con. I got some Dragon Con interviews. I don't think I mentioned that in last week's intro, mostly because I didn't do an intro for last week's episode. Really meant to. Long story about why I didn't, and I was going to go back and add it. I still may, but time is short today and I may not. So for future generations of listeners, you may or may not get an intro to last week's episode. Anyhow, I just think that's a nice little wrinkle to add to the ATL podcast. On today's program, Steve Craig. I think the phrase, "this is a real treat," comes to mind. I think people say that every week. Oh, this week's guest is so amazing, and it's such a treat, and such an honor, and blah, 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 blah. But I just went back and listened to some of it, and I got to say that for me, it was and is a real treat. Steve is a voice and personality that if you're anywhere near my age and grew up listening to 99X here in Atlanta, it was a staple of your life, really. I mean, when I'm probably going to write this in the notes, so I usually say that I don't like to repeat notes and comment, but I will in this case. That if you grew up in Atlanta in the early to mid-90s, that's what it was. There was Lollapalooza. There was going to shows at the Masquerade. There was 99X. Like, that's like just those things are entrenched. And specifically for me, as I mentioned in my interview with Steve, a very particular time in my life when I was driving around as a courier in my automobile with no cell phone and no GPS and no just me and my radio, and he filled my day or most of my afternoon. So not much more to say other than I really hope you enjoy this one. Listen, if you're younger than me and you don't know who Steve is, then this will just be a nice little trip back in time. But if you're around my age, it's especially a treat. All right. Steve, Craig, and I. Away we go. Can you just give me a quick test?
Check one, two, one, two, one, two.
He actually knows how to do this. So I want to start by saying I almost, at the end of that episode, said I want to give a shout out to this nice gentleman who's been sitting here because people would come up and start to yap at him and he would be like, shh, because like he was like, I just thought a nice neighbor, but it turns out, you know, professional courtesy, like, hey, there's a fucking interview going on here.
Well, you were outside and it was a nice little porch area, but you had no red light. Let's say you were live, so, but I kind of could tell that you were.
Right.
So.
But so thank you for that.
I was in the green room.
Right. Yeah. As it were.
And the green porch.
And I did not recognize you as you were a man whose voice I have heard for many years.
I've been told I have a face for radio. You've heard that term before.
And we'll get to my enjoyment of your stylings, I guess.
Thank you.
But let's back up a little bit.
Okay.
So where are you from?
Originally Southern California.
Okay.
Yeah, Huntington Beach area.
Right.
And was born in L.A.,
right.
South L.A., and then we moved after maybe 12 years old, and we moved to Orange County area, Huntington Beach, and didn't want to leave my friends because, you know, I was just going in like junior high, and we were all just really good friends, and we grew up together, and mom and dad said, we'll get you a surfboard, and I went, okay, bye. See you.
Right.
And then I grew up in Orange County.
Did you listen to, oh my God, I can't think of his name. Randy on the Rock. What's his name?
Sir Rodney Bingenheimer.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, the guy was an idol for everybody because he was the guy who was playing the weird stuff that you had in your record collection. That was the nice thing, is he was playing so much different stuff. I mean, even when you consider stations like you mentioned, K-Rock in L.A., which is like they were doing alternative before it was even called alternative.
Right.
And he was playing even further, you know, in the stack with that kind of stuff. So, yeah, we were all huddling around at night and listening to him. And then there was KMET was another big station in Southern California I grew up on. And Dr. Demento was there at night. And, of course, he was playing the really wacky stuff. If it was something that Frank Zappa was involved in, he would play it. Or if it was one of those old novelty tunes, he was playing it. So, actually, when I think about it, now that you bring that up, between Rodney Bingenheimer and Rodney on the Rock and what he was doing, and Dr. Demento, and then, of course, all the other DJs who were just very smooth and suave, whatever.
Right.
That's kind of where the eclectic leanings that I kind of, you know, found maybe got started, I guess.
Well, other than being a music fan, because clearly you were, did you, like, was there an age that you thought, like, that looks like a gig I could do or want to do?
I think it was when all of us were growing up, and somebody mentioned this the other day, radio was the original social media. I mean, that's how you got all of your information about music, pop culture, what was going on, whether it was, you know, news, music, the DJ telling you about what his day was like. But it was all very in your face and very slam home. Top 40 DJs. And we all wanted to sound like we all wanted to sound like this, you know, KEZY in Anaheim. And so that's what we all wanted to do. And we all wanted to be like our over-the-top idols when we were listening to radio.
Right.
And I think at some point...
Rick Dees?
Rick Dees. My guy was Jeff Dean was his name.
West Coast guy?
Yeah, and San Francisco and L.A., but he sounded like this all the time. So I always thought that's the way you were supposed to sound.
What's that weird thing they do with the S's? What is that? Rush has that.
Like a lisp? I have a lateral lisp, so it's like almost like this in a way.
Right, but you know what I'm saying? Like, I think Rush Limbaugh has it, and I don't know, most of the radio guys have that like hard, I don't know.
We call it puking. So if you're a DJ back like in the 60s or 70s, and you talked like this, it was puking. So it's like, well, no pukers on this radio station. So we couldn't force our voice kind of over the top like that.
Right.
And that's, I had that broken from me back in like the late 70s working for a consultant once I got into radio. And his thing was, none of that. We just want you to be a guy on the radio. You're a guy with a great record collection on a great station, and you have something to say, and you got some stuff to play. So just be normal. And so it actually took a lot for us to actually sound somewhat normal.
When you say us, you just mean DJs as a whole?
Yeah, because it was something brand new, because still everybody was trying to be very radio-ish. And I think that it actually changed back in the 80s with the advent of alternative music and college radio becoming popular.
But see, that's the thing. So on the one hand, you had the over-the-top guy, but the college guys were like asleep. Right.
Yeah. So you try to find that happy medium.
Right. That was the WREK guys were like, yeah. So
here's another side of this Vietnamese record that I have.
Exactly.
And you hear the needle being. Right. Wait, I think it's track number 4.
Right. So we got. I think I got a Hoodoo Gurus record. We had a good time at their. I mean, they were like the worst. There was like no middleman.
So we actually when 99X kind of, you know, came around, we were excited about it because all of a sudden you're letting us play what we want to play,
right?
You know, within reason. And so we were all very excited. And so literally, Sean Demery, you know, who's been a good friend of mine for a long time, and we were putting together the whole station. We would bring crates of our CDs and albums to the station. Wait, what about this? What about this? Hey, look at this. What about this? And it was all it came down to was our program director at the time going, "Yeah, I remember that. Go ahead and play it." So it was a really interesting beginning to that. But
right.
I'm probably going all over the map here.
No, it's fine. That's sort of how this thing rolls. Yeah. I mean, do you listen to many podcasts, like in general?
Every once in a while, yeah. The ones that I get on one, no.
It's fine. What do you which ones do you listen to?
Oh, gosh. Nothing in particular, nothing specific. I'll just kind of pop around by subject if I find something.
Right.
There's a couple of tiki podcasts and surf music podcasts that I'll sometimes hone in on.
Right.
Because that's just something that I've always liked.
Do you listen to the actual radio?
Yes. I think more so than the most normal people, only because I'm always listening for not so much competition, but just how people are doing things. And I think in the back of my head, it's also supporting our comrades, you know, who are still out doing live radio. And there's very few of us doing live radio.
Right. My understanding is that it's, you know, coming to the office, as it were, any 3-hour stretch, mm-hmm. do your thing and leave.
And voice track. That's the thing, is like they have these great programs now where you can, you know, once you engage the program, you can hear the last 10 seconds of the song as it fades out. Then you can hit a button and talk like you normally would.
Wow.
And then you hit the next button and the next song starts. And that's your segment. And then on to the next one.
Have you seen, you must have seen the Simpsons where they get like the DJ 3000.
Yes.
And you know, they make some horrible joke. How does it stay so current?
Exactly.
And there is so much bad radio out there, and I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about it, but I asked Nick about this because to me,
he's really English, by the way. A lot of people give him that.
I haven't talked to that Nick yet. I want to talk to that Nick. Uh-huh. I'm talking about Nick Tapp.
Oh, Nick Tapp.
The guy that
Nip Tuck. I thought you meant English Nick. Yeah.
English Nick I would like to speak with.
Yeah. He'll do it. Yeah.
Okay. Please introduce me.
Okay.
I'm very fascinated with English Nick.
He's awesome.
Yeah. And kind of a throwback in some ways, right? Because he is a little over the top.
Oh, we're all throwbacks.
But in a cool way. but to me, It's like in sports, right? I'm a sports fan. I hate every talking head in sports. Mm-hmm. I can watch PTI with Mike and Tony. Do you watch that show? Are you a sports guy at all?
A little bit.
Okay. So there's these two guys, Mike and Tony. I can't even think of their names right now. Mike Wilbon and Tony Kornheiser. Mm-hmm. And they do that sort of typical banter show and they disagree. But A, they don't yell over each other.
Right.
And B, they are honest when they don't know something. Uh-huh. Whereas the Jim Rohns or whoever the world, they're an expert in everything.
Right.
These guys, a soccer story comes up and they're like, you know.
I don't know.
Right. Or even like they'll, what's his, like, one of the guys is really into the NBA, so he'll say to the other one, like, can you name a member of a team that's not doing very well other than, you know, star A?
Right.
And he doesn't stay up late, so he's like, yeah, that game was on at 1 a.m. I didn't see it. So anyway, they're like sort of the last of that. So so for me, in many ways, getting turned on to Stern in the mid-90s sort of ruined all radio for me, because these people were genuinely funny.
Yes.
Super original, and so many DJs. Again, you're a guest in my show here. I don't want to shit on your profession.
No.
But just bad jokes, and you know, the morning stuff. I mean, honestly, it's like unlistenable to the morning. Like, call in with the boyfriend that broke up with you, and let's call him. And just does it pain you as much as it pains me?
Yes, it does. And that comes down to sometimes bad consulting and consultants. I have a great affinity for a certain consultant. His name is Jerry Clifton, and he's the one who basically told us no more puking and no more acting like a disc jockey. Here's a box full of albums. Go to a local high school at lunch, give these away, shake hands, make friends, and tell them that you're on at night. And that was my bit when I was working in Fresno, California, one of my early jobs. And I was the night jock. And so, you know, I just would go out and just shake hands and, you know, kiss babies and that kind of thing and try to grow a following, because there was nothing else to listen to. The kids will listen to you or the other guy.
Right.
That's all they have. Or they're listening to their own records in their own homes. But mostly radio ruled back in like in the late 70s and then through the 80s. And so that was a good consultant. He was great. He said, just you're a guy on the radio. Have a good time and let your personality shine.
By the way, that would still work today.
I know, but
go where the people are. Exactly. Speak to them.
Exactly.
Be a real person. Engage with them.
Yeah, and then but you have some consultants now who still think, and I won't name any because it'll be bashing, and a lot of them are good friends, and a lot of them work with good friends. So
right, sure.
But it's still like, okay, well, we need to engage our audience. So you need to do this particular bit, and you have to have this particular joke or this line of getting people involved. And it sometimes works, sometimes it doesn't. And then to even put a more of a damper on all of that, you can only do it for 10 to 20 seconds at a pop, because this goes into a lot of technical issues with radio, the way ratings are done now with the metering system, as opposed to the old diary system, where back in the day, you had to actually write down on a piece of paper what you were listening to and when you were listening to it. And when you changed, like if you punched out while you're in the car, you had to note on your diary that I went over here now. But people never did that. And so it was always recall. It was always the station that was giving away $10,000, $20,000 in a lump sum, or the one who had the wacky morning show that they say, well, I listen to this station all day long,
right?
Which they don't.
Right.
Because when all of a sudden it went electronic and digital and you put a meter on them, then they realize, oh, they're listening to this station for about 15 minutes, and they pop over here for about 15 minutes, and they go back over here for about 30 minutes, and then they go into a store, and they pick up this other station that they might not choose, but you're still listening to it, and so they get credit. And so then they found that people were listening to 10 to 12 to 15 different radio stations during the course of their day, and it was all over the place.
Are they watching us right now?
In what way? In what way?
Well, you're speaking of this very, you know, speaking of which, something's being piped in through here.
See? It's Big Brother, man, I'm telling you.
Well, that's what you were basically describing is the in that really good Tom Cruise movie that I can't think of the name of, Minority Report.
Yes.
And you walk into the store and it reads your eyes and says, welcome back, Mr. Takiyomo.
Well, it's kind of like that if you're a participant, and that's the thing.
Well, that's so, what I'm asking.
Yeah, they put a little, it's about the size of a thumb drive maybe, and they're finding some way to put it on your smartphone so you can do it that way and maybe get more participants. But we have a limited amount of people who are participating in the radio surveys, but they basically have a little like a pager kind of device.
Isn't there just a way to figure it out without even bothering the person? Couldn't they just, or is that illegal?
That might not be legal. Yeah.
I figure they're already doing it, right?
Yeah, and that's the problem with the ratings right now, which is really hurting and impacting radio a lot, and the way you hear certain things programmed, the type of stations that you have, or you know, lack of good stations like what we would do if we had a chance to put a station together, is you have a very limited amount of participation. You have very accurate metering now. Very accurate to compile people's listening habits. Whereas back in the old diary system, you had a lot of participants. Everybody was participating, but you had a very bad sample. You just didn't really have it. It wasn't accurate. So you have a weird shifting. So now we have very few people participating and very accurate ratings. So what it comes down to is ratings fluctuate greatly within radio. And they monitor or they survey people who listen to radio. And everybody listens to radio at some point. You're going to be exposed to it. But then, you know, we also compete now with streaming, with satellite, with people and their own listening devices, iPhones, the music they have on their playlists, a different way of listening now. But radio is still very much a part of that. It's still got a good chunk of people who look to us for maybe music, what's going on, pop culture, news, maybe personalities that you like or someone. It's a personal connection for people who do live radio. But the way that the ratings have always gone, it makes radio stations kind of clam up a little bit and hold on to old philosophies and old ways of programming, where you have to research this, you have to research that. This song has to be researched to death before you play it, and this one has to be familiar before you play it. And back in the day, from my experience, the stations that worked and the stations that were hugely popular, 99X is a great example, you trusted the people who are in the positions of programming and music. Our program director knew exactly what she was doing. Our music director had a firm handle on going out and meeting the people and knowing what they want and what they like. Combine that with some traditional research, and then you have a really good system. And then if something was brand new and something was kind of cool and off the wall and it worked in the middle of the 90s, we'd play it without having to research it.
Right.
After you play it a while, then you can research and see, you know, if it has any staying power or if it's something you might want to, you know, play for a while and get rid of. But we were taking a lot of risks, and people knew it. everyone who was listening to 99X at the time knew that we were taking risks in anything we did. And they kind of, that's what they were listening to us for, to see what are they going to do next? What are they going to talk about next in the way of what's this next festival I want to go to, or what do I want to do, you know, with this particular aspect of Atlanta living, or what do I want to do with this particular band, or, you know, different concerts that are coming through. We were, I hate to say we were on the cutting edge of that. We were just doing what we thought was cool and talking to as many people as we could to find out what they wanted. And it worked. It worked gloriously. And then now you try to get stations to maybe think like that, and they don't, because they're scared, because the ratings are so tenuous and so delicate when it comes to competition that they're afraid to take risks. And it all comes down to very, very researched and very same and very repetitive. And like you say, sometimes when it comes down to the morning, people telling jokes and doing things that are just not, that listeners don't really care about.
Right.
And it's very difficult.
But they
to
clearly do. There are people that clearly do, because they keep doing it.
Yeah.
And people do call in
yeah.
to those shows.
Yeah.
But let us flash back.
Okay.
Let us flash back to that wonderful time known as the 90s. Okay.
Yes.
So my son, who's 8 and has a phenomenal taste in music, like I'm always shocked. So he'll hear something in the car with us and then immediately go home and YouTube it. And look up 2 or 3 more people and like then get into that thing, yeah. which is super cool.
Yeah.
Because it, so first of all, it's just cool that the technology exists. But at 8 years old, I don't know that my tastes were that sophisticated. But anyhow, I forget what Nirvana song he heard, but he was, next thing I know, he's like rocking out to Nirvana in the house. And I there's those times in your life that are marked, right? Mm-hmm. And it's certainly, like that band in particular, and Kurt, because he's dead, is very easy to point to.
Right.
But I do remember the first time I heard Smells Like Teen Spirit.
Yes.
It was something we hadn't heard before.
Yes.
So in my mind, 99X was born the next day, but it wasn't, right?
It kind of was, actually. That was the song, and there were a few of us at the station who... and we were Power 99 at the time.
Right, which, to explain to people, that was the pop station?
Yeah, kind of a flame-throwing top 40 pop, kind of Michael Jackson, Janet Jackson.
Right. What else was popular?
Tears for Fears, and it was I can't remember a lot of the stuff. Prince, of course, was popular, and it was just anything that was on the top 40.
Right.
And if it was up-tempo, they were... all about it.
Right.
And
there so was not a lot of ballads.
Nah, not really. No. And there was a lot of competition too at the time, which was why the ratings were kind of going down. And so as we were kind of, you know, nursing that station, we had a guy come in by the name of Will Pendarvis. And he and myself and Sean Demery, who was our music director, were very, very well versed in what the college stations were playing.
Right.
And because we were still kind of holding over some of the late 80s stuff. We were steering away from the hair metal and that those bands were trying to get a foothold. And we were still saying, you know, God, I hope the Smiths really do something soon, you know. And so we're kind of like just listening to that kind of stuff. And then you had bands for me, early Gin Blossoms. And then even I'm going to get shot for saying this, even Hootie and the Blowfish was a little different than what you were hearing on the radio at the time, even though they kind of got oversaturated. But as soon as we started hearing Soundgarden and
Pearl Jam.
Early Pearl Jam, Mother Love Bone,
right,
and Nirvana and stuff like that, it's like, okay, this isn't your typical wacky hair metal.
Right.
This is something completely different.
Right.
And college stations were starting to pick up on it.
Right.
And like you're saying, when I first heard Smells Like Teen Spirit, I went, this is rather anthemic. This could be something kind of cool. And then I go back to, you know, I was thinking back to a certain song that was pivotal for me in about 1979 was Rapper's Delight. And quick story, I was working as the night jock in Fresno, California.
Right.
And the competition across the street doing the same type of format, and he all of a sudden started playing Rapper's Delight, which it was a huge, I mean, for just even pop radio, it was a huge song because it was the first accessible rap song.
Right. And it was like 7 minutes long.
Exactly. But it was familiar because it was done to the beat of Good Times, you know, by Chic, and everybody knew this song. And so the competition was playing it at night. My boss said, oh, I'm not going to play that. Here, play Rock Lobster. This is really cool out of Georgia. And I listened to Rock Lobster and went, B-52s? Okay, this is kind of wacky. This is kind of nutty. Okay, cool. Right. And I did the typical stunt where you lock yourself in the studio and play it over and over again and try to generate some talk. And I did that, and it went over like a lead balloon. And
it's now in my head, though. Thank you very much.
Good.
Let's put it in the listener's head.
Okay, good. Over, and I was playing the long version, too. So, and then what got me was the guy.
Can you do one quick Fred? Do you have a Fred in you? Rock Lobster. Can you do anything?
Oh, Fred Schneider. Hey, everybody. How are you? Come over here. Let me take a picture with you.
Is that what he would say to you?
Yeah, he's a great guy. He actually,
he's still with us.
Yes, he is. He's a great guy. He actually co-hosted one of my House of Retro Pleasure episodes with me one time, which was awesome. I was like, here's my box. Whatever you want to play, just play it. He goes, oh, I like this. Do you have any Pylon? It's like, that's awesome. And so anyway, the guy across the guy in the, I'm at competing night jock in Fresno, he went out to the high schools and he passed out. And back again, this is before
45s.
This is before there were printers. I mean, it's like mimeographs. He went out and he gave out to the high school kids lyric sheets that he put together with Rapper's Delight on it. So now kids could listen to the song on the radio and then they had a lyric sheet.
Wow.
This is before Google.
This is so genius.
Like, yes, exactly. So, and then of course he just completely killed me in the competition
because
I wouldn't touch Rapper's Delight.
Right.
And so that was the point where I thought, okay, something's changing here. And then of course, as we got into the early 80s, rap music became, you know, the party favorite of a lot of kids. And so it was the dawning of rap, and I totally missed the bus.
Sorry, dude.
And I know. And so then another pivotal point for me, though, was when before I got into radio, I was listening to your typical 70s stuff. I mean, Aerosmith was a big stretch for me. That was Aerosmith and Peter Frampton. I mean, if I would go as far as like Deep Purple, that was like the big kid rock at the time. And my girlfriend, when I was in high school, she was into, or she started discovering punk rock. And I was just, you know, I'm like, you know, actually listening to Barry Manilow going, this is kind of nice. And so then she says, come with me. And it was my 17th birthday, and she took me to the Whiskey in L.A., snuck me in.
Wow.
And it was the first West Coast show by the Ramones.
Get out.
Their first West Coast show.
Get out of here.
No, seriously. And so I got snuck in because I was a big kid. You know, I kind of, you know, I'm tall. And walk in there, and I'm thinking, oh, this is real. I'm going to get killed. And so I kind of stood back, and then Melody, my girlfriend, goes, just wait. You'll like this. And they get out there,
right,
and the show lasted 35 minutes,
right.
I swear.
100 songs,
boom,
35
boom,
minutes.
And 100 miles an hour.
Right.
And I could still feel just the wind and heat coming off of just what they were doing on stage. Fairly intimate venue, and it was a very historic moment that I found out later on. But at that point, I went, oh my God, this is going to really piss off my parents. This is going to be awesome. And
right.
Then I went and bought a couple of their little vinyls that they had, the albums and stuff. And then I started getting into the imports that were coming out of the UK, and then some of the New York stuff that was, you know, following the Ramones. And all of a sudden, I became a punk rock snob. And
as well, you should be.
Yeah. And everything else.
If you're going to enjoy anything, you should have to, you should be morally superior than everybody who doesn't enjoy it.
Exactly. And so everything that I grew up listening to that I love, everything from the Beatles and the Doors and Aerosmith and all these bands were like, oh no, I can't listen to those anymore. And then
you became the kid from The Simpsons for a second there.
Exactly. And so with the collection of records that I had, I was just lucky enough to be a friend of a guy who worked at a radio station in Orange County. And so I had this collection of you know, stuff that was, you know, imports and things that I picked up at Tower Records and all these different, you know, when there was a record store on every other corner, you know, kind of
like. But Tower was started. The bomb.
Tower Records was awesome. They would have everything. And so I would get all these punk rock records. And so the guy, Jim, at the station said, hey, you know, we're thinking about doing this punk rock thing like at night. Are you interested? I went, yeah, okay. And I was just like a dumb kid. And it's like, this is like, you know, I'm senior in high school. And he said, well, just come on in and we'll, you know, set you all up and you can do your show like at midnight on Saturday night.
So wait a minute, okay. You hadn't had a radio gig before this?
No, I just hung out at the radio station. I worked a little bit like on, I would get into the van that they had and we would go out to appearances and I'd throw out t-shirts and stuff like that.
But did you want to be a DJ?
I had entertained it a little bit, okay. Yeah. But it wasn't really an ambition. But all of a sudden they said, hey, you know, you want to play some punk rock on the radio? I went, well, sure, yeah. And the show lasted 2 weeks. It was done. It was just too loud and too obnoxious. I didn't know what I was doing. And this is a top 40 station, a top 40 AM station, all of a sudden playing punk rock. It's like, No, that didn't work. But at that point, I got kind of the fever.
Right.
I went, oh, there were people calling up going, what's this? This is great. This is awesome. There were a couple of people going, you know, what are you doing? Where's my England Dan and John Ford Coley? I how come I'm not hearing the anything by, you know, the Beach Boys? And it was just a very interesting mix, but I kind of got excited about, you know, being on the radio. And then they had a broadcast workshop at the station. And they said, hey, you know, you want to enroll in this and we'll teach you a little bit more and teach you how to be a DJ and whatever. It's kind of like a broadcast school that you hear about, like the Connecticut School of Broadcasting, but it was actually at the radio station. And so you were taught by people who were working actually at the station instead of people who have been retired and out of the business for
a while. Teach you how to pot it up, as we say.
They would, yeah. Pot, potentiometer. Pot it up, turn your headphones up, and then back then you were working with actual records, and so it was like a quarter turn to make sure your switch goes so it doesn't go like that, and all these things now, and how to line up, how to pull all of your commercials and your carts, and if anyone remembers what 8-tracks looked like, that's what we had to deal with. They were 2-track, but it was the same cartridge thing that you would use for commercials, and then all of a sudden music made its way to carts, and then these miraculous things called CDs came out, and so I kind of went through that whole gamut of you know, the equipment kind of stuff, which was, you know, it's fun. Looking back, it's fun to watch the evolution of that, because I remember when the term disc jockey first started, you were literally jocking records because you had 3.5 minutes on a record to get the next one queued up and ready, find out what you're going to say, and make sure everything was technically good, and at the same time watch your liners, the things that your program director wanted you to say, the things you had to hit. You had to time up to the news at the top of the hour and all these different things. And so it was like you're an octopus trying to, you know, get everything going on time, so you would avoid the dreaded dead air.
Right.
And that's happened to us all, and it's happened, you know, several times. But
My assumption is now when you go in, you have like a laptop in front of you, and that's it.
Got a big screen. I got 2 screens. Actually, I have 3 screens when I think
about
it.
And a laptop?
I have a laptop. I don't use the laptop because I have it, you know, all set up with my own computer that's in the studio, and I have all the stuff that I need on that.
And is there a man behind the glass anymore?
Nope.
Is that you?
No, it's just me. It's just me. and like if you listen, 97 won the river is where I am now doing mornings. It's classic rock.
Right.
It's the stuff that I dumped back in like 1980 that now it's like, okay, this stuff is great. You know, I did like it. Okay. But I'm the person in there. I mean, it's all live. It's live radio. I'm the one man operation in there, and everything is it's all digital. It's all files now. It's not CDs. It's not records. It's not carts. It's it's all lined up and pre-programmed. But I'm the one who programs.
Could you in fact do it from your house if you had to?
I could. The broadcast element of it, no, only because the studio is still where it's all put together. But as for prepping and programming it, I could get the whole day ready from home the previous day. So I'll go home and I'll program the entire day's worth of music.
Right. I should have you bring in a laptop and show me exciting things.
Music Master. That's the program. The old one was Selector, and now it's Music Master. And still people use Selector, but it's a it goes back to the old card file system. Because once the computer age took over radio programming, it's very, very easy to program because you categorize certain songs by how popular they are or how they research. I hate that word, research. And then you have your big pile of old songs that still do well, and new songs, things called recurrents, which are new and popular, but not that new. And all these categories rotate. And the computer does it for you to make sure it's fresh and make sure you're not playing certain songs back to back.
Right.
You don't want to hear Stairway to Heaven next to Welcome to the Machine by Pink Floyd because it's just drony and slow. So you kind of have all these different things that you can program into the program that make it a nice mix.
Right.
And that takes care of itself now. But back in the day, you had to do it on a card file system. Literally, you'd have to pull a song out, write down the time and day that you played it, put it in the back, play it, and then go on to the next one. And then you had like a little flow sheet. Okay, we're going to pick from this category. Then I want to pick from this category.
What would Top 40 do? Because they're only playing 20 songs a day.
Well, there'd be only 20 songs in that category.
I mean,
and then a few oldies to go sprinkle in,
right?
Yeah.
So let's flash back as we were to this moment in time when Nirvana comes out.
Yes.
And I, like I said, it feels like 9X was the same day, but I'm driving along in my car, and it's not just Nirvana, but like then you played Elvis Costello, followed by or instead of like then like XTC, and then like
yeah.
then
yeah.
I almost said I picked up my phone, but I didn't because there was no cell phone. When I got home, I called my friend Adam and said, holy shit, do you know what these guys are doing? This isn't like some special hour. This is actually this radio station
yep.
playing these amazing songs that we love.
Yeah. That was when the phones blew up, and a lot of it started when we kind of did it as a test because we had this show called On the Edge. So during the day, we still had a wacky 10-person morning show. We had a guy, high energy puker guy in during the day, and then at night, Will Pendarvis came on, and he was just a guy, but a strange guy, and he really was just strange. But he knew this music that was coming out of college radio like the back of his hand. We all were fans of it. We all knew it. He was just immersed in it. And so he would be dredging up all these different songs, the stuff coming out of Seattle, the stuff that was still kind of popping around the late 80s, like Elvis Costello was still putting out stuff, XTC, Hoodoo Gurus, Smiths,
right.
And all these great bands that were, you know, still pumping through the 80s, and they were all of a sudden entering into the 90s. And the phones were going absolutely crazy at night. And we only had like maybe four or five lines, and they would not stop. And Will was going, I can't handle the phones. Can I get someone in here to help me? And so we had some of the production guys come in and answer phones, and one of them all of a sudden turned into his own personality, and that was Wendell. And his real name is Keith Eubanks. We used to call him Fast Freddy Luca. Rest his soul. He passed away about 10 years ago. And he was the voice of 99X. He was the whisper guy. It's like 99X. That was Keith Eubanks. He was an amazing individual.
I'm gonna have to go find that after we talk. Yeah. He's no longer with us.
No, he passed away about 10 years ago, maybe a little bit longer than that. Yeah,
what a bummer.
Just a phenomenal talent. I mean, the guy was just he was funny. He was irreverent. He had this ability to pull stuff out of pop culture. Again, this is like 1992, 93, 94, when there wasn't an internet, really. He just had this stuff, and he could get a hold of it, and I don't know how he got that actually on the radio, and that was his magic that he worked. But he ended up helping out Will Pendarvis at night by answering the phones. He created his own character, and that at that moment, knowing that it was just so hugely popular and people were responding to that style of music that we were playing now, the stuff that was, you know, the grunge rock and everything else that was around that, we decided we need to do this full time. And so our general manager at the time, Bill Phippen, said, do it. Just do it. We went, really? Yeah, just do it. And we did, and then we just launched. It was October, gosh, I forget the actual date. I know people know what it is,
but
back in 1990, two.
Right.
And we just unleashed, and we and Freddie or Keith Eubanks, he put everything together image wise. We call them imaging. Imaging is what's between the songs. You know, when it's not a live DJ, it's our, you know, an imaging piece. And it was just uncontrollable. It was like, looking back, and as we've kind of talked about it amongst ourselves, it was like the dawn of MTV,
right?
In a way,
right?
You know, for Atlanta, because nothing had ever been done like this before outside of maybe the music. Yeah, college radio, RAS and REK. These stations were doing it, but they didn't have the style that we were kind of putting together or putting with it. And I think that's what,
right.
What
really, well, like I said, if you wanted to hear a really boring 19-year-old describe songs to you, sure, all day, mm-hmm. but it certainly wasn't a quote unquote mainstream radio station. And certainly yeah. not, you know, with all the fun that comes with an actual radio station, like concerts and giveaways and
yes.
all the cool stuff.
Yeah. We just had a blast. I mean, and then, like I'd said before, we only had so much music, and then it was like, well, what do you have at home? Oh, I got a whole bunch of this stuff. And literally we were bringing crates of music in and right. going through everything. And at that time, and this is something that nobody ever does anymore. I remember it was when a good example was Songs of Faith and Devotion by Depeche Mode. When that album came out, we actually had a copy of the CD in the studio. And we had, with Sharpie, we had ticked off maybe about four or five different cuts on the album that we could play. Right. If we had an excuse to play something, you know, it's like, well, here's something that Depeche Mode did in 1985. Here's something from the brand new album.
Right.
We could do just, you know, if we wanted to play two Depeche Modes back to back, we could.
Right.
Because you had a DJ in there, a guy that you trusted, a guy that you liked and listened to, saying, hey, if you like this, you're going to like this. And so it wasn't, oh my God, you can't play two artists back to back. That's a rule you can't break. We were just doing what we felt was good in the moment. I had Frank Black in the studio when he broke away to do solo stuff. And he had a song that was a B-side from the single that he had out, Away from the Pixies. And it was a cover version of a Beach Boys song. Hang On to Your Ego was the name of the song. And he was, you know, so he wasn't in the studio or anything. I'm just by myself. And then I heard that track and I played it. And I said, here's the Beach Boys track, by the way. Here's what the...
Because right?
it was an alternate version or the original version of the Beach Boys song, Hang On to Your Ego. The song that the Beach Boys did on Pet Sounds was I know there's an answer. You know the story. Right. And so I played that. I'm playing something from Frank Black, and then I'm playing the Beach Boys from right. Pet Sounds, and then right. I went into like Sting or something.
Like 1967.
Is exactly.
Like Pet Sounds.
But you're putting something into context, and that's good. I would think
it's
that's
great.
Good. That's good freeform radio
it's
because
great.
You already have them listening to this song and say, oh, I like Frank Black. I'm a big fan of the Pixies, blah, blah, blah. Oh, I didn't know that, and oh, right. there's the song.
Right, and maybe you could even turn somebody on to that whole Pet Sounds album,
bingo.
Which is this amazing, groundbreaking
exactly.
thing.
And well, that's the kind of stuff that nobody ever does anymore. I do. I still can put in my little Steve work if I do like a this date in history,
right.
or if I have a birthday, that kind of thing. I can slip that stuff in sometimes.
Right. Well, I'm recalling the Steve's College of Musical Knowledge,
which I still do at 8:10 every morning.
Okay. Well, yeah. Phenomenal. So, you know, bringing back to me and my...
It's a glorified trivia question. That's all it is.
Well, but here's the thing. But I'm telling you how important this stuff is for me. And as I found, if I talk about things and it's interesting to me, it's usually interesting to at least one other person.
Yeah.
So in 1995, 94 and 95, uh-huh. I had a job as... You're trying to remember your life.
I know.
I had a job as a courier. Mm-hmm. Like dry. And so this is pre-GPS, mm-hmm. pre-Google Maps... Right? This is me and a fucking...
Thomas Brothers Maps.
Well, Thomas Guide in LA. Here, we didn't even have that. Here,
oh,
there was
man.
This big, weird, huge thing. I forget even what it was called. And I had a pager, and that's how we
man.
Communicated. And I was driving around in my car all day.
And that's a pager. When the pager went off, you had to find a phone somewhere.
Dude, oh, exactly. Man. Like, I'd have a delivery. So, first of all, the building you guys were in, the Atlanta Business Chronicle building...
Yeah, before we moved, so it's the one right across, LS Teca was across the street.
Right, it's
there,
now,
yeah.
it's now.
Johnson Ferry Road, I guess, or is it?
No, it's.
No.
It's right on the corner of whatchamacallit, whatchamacallit.
Yeah, corner of Lennox and Lennox. Right. Yeah, right in through there, yeah. The Buckhead building.
It is now the Atlanta Tech block. Yes. Whatever. Yes. Uh-huh. So that was your building, and I would drive up and down that street all day, dropping off at lawyers and whatever else was
Lennox
there.
Lennox and Piedmont.
Lennox and Piedmont. And actually, when I got in, after I would drop the package, I'd be like, can I use your phone, to the secretary and like save me a fucking quarter. Right. Or but funny enough, I actually dropped in at least once, and it might have been twice, where I tried to give you a request,
uh-huh.
neither of which was played. It's okay. I'm not upset.
I'm sorry.
But but you did take requests.
Yeah.
So
I would have. Yeah.
I just went to the, you know, the secretary and was like, I wrote down, would you please play whatever, and I gave it to you. But yeah. It either never made it to you. Let's blame it on the secretary. Maybe it never
made
it
to you. Never got to me.
But I have like these extremely fond memories. So like, again, to try to put it
because again, if that would have happened, if they would have brought that back and said, hey, some guy just stopped by and wanted you to play this. Oh, hell yes.
Right.
You know, it's like, well, let me find it. That's the kind of reach, that we tried to have.
Right. And well, this is the part that I'm not sure people understand, is back to you, what you talked about is the pre-social media, is that the DJ is a pretty powerful guy. Like, he is the person keeping us informed, because it wasn't everywhere.
Right.
And so you were like, wow, like, I hope this guy plays my song.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, there's many songs like, you know, with attributed to DJs, like, please play my song or whatever.
Yes, yes.
But really, like, that's where things were at. And that's why I was, like, so excited to talk to you, because, like, you were this big part of my driving around life for, you know, my car for 12 hours a day. So.
Yeah. And the real nice point of my whole show was, of course, at noon for right. the House of Retro Pleasure, and that turned into the Retroplex when we started playing 90s stuff. But that was always a great point, because that was my passion point, because we were playing stuff that was current, and there was stuff that was formatted. There were certain songs that we were playing in rotation, and this was to go along with the record labels, and they were always very liberal when it came to playing different songs from their stable of artists. And so it was still free form in a lot of ways, but still very structured, because we did have to compete. But at noon, it was anything goes. And my only rule was, if it was released as a single, it was fair game.
Okay.
That was the only thing. And then Keith Cunningham, still a good friend of mine, phone boy, was my assistant in there. And he was always kind of the keeper of the requests. He would kind of take the phone calls, and he would say, somebody asking for Tears for Fears, somebody asking for ABC, somebody asking for Duran Duran, or this 80s stuff. And then I would say, okay, yeah, yeah. And I would sometimes take the calls and tape them.
Right.
Tape. And oh man, when you're talking about, you know, digital editing now,
right?
Back then it was these two massive reels of tape, and if you had a person that you wanted to get on the air to take their request and talk about, you know, why they're requesting a certain song, you'd have to maybe make edits, and that came down to razor blades and tape
right.
on the tape. And so that was the old disc jockey skills coming into play. So I wish that I would have some sort of video of myself and Phone Boy working that and getting everything ready to air. And some of the stuff was very much on the fly, or we got this right, just in time.
Another song is playing and about to end.
Oh, exactly. And then you had to find the song that they were requesting, because if I didn't have it in the digital library, and we were starting to get digital at that point, we had a lot of stuff in our big CD wall, and we had to find that particular CD, and it happened to be cut number 10 on the CD. Or I had to go to the Retroplex bags, and they were just CD travel bags, and try to find this particular compilation CD that might have had that particular track by the Hoodoo Gurus or whoever, and try to find that, cue it up, get it ready to go, and at the same time try to edit up somebody who just requested a song. So it was hectic. It was wonderful. It was fun, and we made it work.
Right.
And I think if you remember listening to that hour of my show, you could tell that there was passion there.
Absolutely.
You could tell that there was, that we were having a lot of fun. And if somebody would request something, the song that comes to mind is Din Da Da, Trommeltons was like the, it was a don da da din da da din da da din da da, but it was like a German kind of instrumental thing.
Right.
And somebody requested that, and he goes, hey, do you remember this song called Din Da Da or the Trommel? I went, yes! And I went and I had it somewhere, and I was shuffling around and found it and played it. And stuff like that, that is what I was living for on a daily basis, is to find those tracks from the 80s, because the show was, you know, the lost 80s tracks.
Right.
Stuff that was either favorites that you don't hear too much, or something that I haven't heard this since it was out kind of stuff.
Right.
And that's what we were having so much
fun. I remember you let me know what who sang the Scope song. Do you remember that?
The Scope song.
Remember was the Scope commercial, but like you like found like the original, like I really don't want to embarrass myself, but it was like,
oh man,
whoa, 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 whoa. Wasn't it that song?
Oh, Tarzan Boy. Yes, that's another thing. It's like you would see these commercials,
right?
And it could be anywhere from a Scope commercial to a Budweiser commercial or whatever, right. And they were using little snippets of 80s songs,
right?
And people say, hey, have you heard, you know, the song that's on this Budweiser commercial? And it's like, well, yeah, and then you play the song. But yeah, if I could find it, if I could archive that and pull it out. And that was my day.
Does that stuff exist somewhere? Like, is there a bank of old days that like we could find?
You mean tapes of the shows?
Yeah,
they're out there somewhere. A lot of people taped some stuff. Did I
on a cassette? Yes, they probably taped it.
Yes, yeah.
But the radio station doesn't keep them for posterity.
No, and when the station shut down, when the lovely Cumulus people shut us down. A lot of that stuff was completely destroyed, and there was one guy, Mike Key is his name. Mike is still over there in the building, and he literally saved boxes and boxes and boxes of our Live X tapes that we had, because you know we had artists coming in to do acoustic sets.
Good
for
stuff.
Like 30 minutes,
right.
And that was a huge archive. And we always have the artists coming back and saying, hey, do you have this tape that I did back in like 1996? It's like, well, yes, we do. And that stuff was literally on its way to the dumpster.
And he saved it.
And he intercepted and said, you're not going anywhere with those. And he got them and he took them under his own power and he archived them himself. So he still has all that
stuff. So what year did that did the station go away?
2008.
Right. So it was when I just had come back. So I was gone for Atlanta for about 10 years. Yeah. I moved away in 96. But when we look back on that time, like grunge music, quote unquote, it does seem like super brief, doesn't it? Because it sort of took over the world so much.
Yeah.
I guess it was one of those things where like we just didn't think it was going to go away. And like what happened?
But 3 years, when you think about that, that's a long time when you're in it. You know, when you're 20 something and you're in that period, that's a long time. 4 years is high school.
Like so I was at every Lollapalooza show. Did you go to all of them?
Did you go to the first one with the big thing you climb on and bang on?
I don't know that I climbed on anything.
Yeah.
Where could you bang on them?
There was a big, giant, big wall of steel at the first Lollapalooza. You could actually climb on this thing and just take a wrench and bang on it.
My memories of the first Lollapalooza were, what was Ice-T's band? The Cop Killa? What was the name of that band?
Oh, man.
I remember they were playing during the day, I think, when I got there. I think they were like the first. Who headlined the first one? Do you remember?
It was Jane's Addiction.
Was the first one?
I think so, yeah.
So the first three were like phenomenal. And by the fourth time, it had like jumped the shark, right?
Yeah.
By the fourth time, it was like, well, now it is Pearl Jam and and it was like the big names.
Yeah.
Whereas the first 3 years was kind of like
exploratory.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Like with the circus sideshow guy.
Yep.
So were you at all those shows?
Yeah.
So here's a question that I'm trying to do some sort of thematic Atlanta thing where I ask people like Atlanta questions.
Yeah.
And so like I just asked the guest we just had, but this is going to be especially interesting for you. We might have to make it a two-parter. So the first part would be, what is the best show you ever saw in Atlanta? Who and where?
Wow. That's so hard. So many shows on a small scale, so many shows on a large scale. Gosh. You mean festival-wise or individual show?
Well, I was thinking a particular band, but I guess you could answer with a festival if you wanted to, but I'm trying to hone you in on an artist that, you know, band or group, person or group that just like...
The band, well... For me, and this is on a personal level, the band that struck me and has stayed with me to this day was The Refreshments. Do you remember the song Bandidos?
How did it go?
I got the pistols, so I'll keep the pesos. Yeah, that seems fair.
Yeah.
That it was just like a, they were a one-hit wonder.
You didn't quite give us, you didn't, that was a very toned down.
I know.
But I got the pistols.
So I'll keep the pesos. It was so just how far down do you want to go? And we could talk it out over a cup of Joe.
Right.
And you can look deep into my eyes like I was a supermodel. it was like, it was a song about, you know, bad Mexico border bank robbery gone bad. So anyway, that band always stuck with me, and I saw them at the House of Blues, back when it was the House of Blues, at the Olympics, and then
what is it now?
Oh well, Tabernacle. Yeah, So I mean, but it was I remember when it reopened. It was just the House of Blues.
Right.
And then, of course, the Tabernacle took over. And that band just rocked my face off. And they just spoke to me in some way. And I've always been a big fan of them. And Roger Klein and the Peacemakers is what the band has turned into now. And they're one of the most successful independent bands out of the Southwest now. And they're always here at Smith's Old Bar. And I never miss those shows. And those shows are just raucous, tequila, splashing, amazing shows. They substituted for, I forget what band it was that couldn't show up at one of our big day out shows in Lakewood.
The big day out.
And, I forget what band it was that their equipment didn't show up. And so we had a spot open on the main stage and the refreshments were on the small stage. And, our backstage people are going, we need a band. And I said, you guys want to play? And they go, hell yeah.
Right.
And so they went up on the main stage. So they were like the second to the main headliner, and they just ripped it up. And that was one of the most, probably the best rock in a show I've ever seen on a larger scale.
Were there multiple big day outs?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I'm trying to think of the one that I saw. Did Weezer headline one?
Yes. Yeah.
I think I was at that one.
That might've been the one, as a matter of fact.
Well, I when we get offline, I should. So when I first got on Facebook, I had found this old list. I used to keep the list of concerts on like this notebook, and I found the pictures, and so I immediately put them on Facebook to like anyway. So I want to find it. We can compare notes on the Atlanta shows we went to. But I want to ask you the rest of my Atlanta quiz questions because we could talk music for hours.
But the best show that's so hard to answer because there's so many good ones. There's a lot of bad ones too.
Right. But the average person can kind of relax. You, it's even harder for you to relax because it's what you did for a living. But but let me ask you. So are you a Waffle House fan?
Yes.
What is your favorite meal at the Waffle House?
The patty melt. Not the Texas toast, but it's the regular old patty melt.
I could have one right now.
Yeah.
Okay. What is your least favorite thing about Atlanta?
Traffic. That's the pat answer. I know.
Besides the traffic, I need that buzzer from a member on Family Feud.
Something else.
Something somebody said. You go, try again.
Something about Atlanta that you hate. Traffic. And this is a comparison to the time that I spent working in New York City. You could get anywhere at any time fairly easily in New York City. Compared to Atlanta,
right?
It's just hard to get somewhere because you have to get in your car, you have to go and you drive, you find a place to park, and it's not so much traffic, but even when you're off of the highways, it's hard to get somewhere.
Right. Uber does help.
Yes.
Like I went to Dragon Con a couple times this weekend, and if it wasn't for Uber, I might have gone once, but I went three times because it was easy in, easy out.
Yeah. And see, that's about the only way that you could probably alleviate that particular problem that I don't like is just it's hard to get to a venue. Something I don't like about Atlanta right now is the lack of venues. That for back in the 90s, there was so many small clubs you could see some great local music. We had a great local music, a local rock scene, and it's just gone. It's just completely gone now. When you had places like The Point, and you had Highlander, and you had Dottie's, and all these different, the Star Bar is still there, and you had the Cotton Club. Not the basement Tabernacle Cotton Club, but the one that was over by the old financial center.
Right.
And I like the
Roxy because I don't want to call it whatever the fuck it is.
Buckhead Theater. Right. Whatever.
Come on.
Yeah,
I can't get
the Roxy.
I can't get behind that.
Yeah. I remember when they used to open up the top part up in the balcony.
Right.
And you could see shows that way.
What is your favorite place to eat in Atlanta? That's not the Waffle House since we covered that.
Nuevo Laredo. That's the first thing that kind of always comes to mind because their food is amazing, and it's those Cadillac margaritas.
Right.
Yeah.
You don't have to give me the street address, but which part of town are you in these days?
I'm in Smyrna.
Okay. You like the Smyrna?
Smynings.
Smynings. You're in the Smyrna Vinings border.
Smynings. Well, Smyrna is so many young rednecks near Atlanta.
No. Come on, dude. I can't believe I've never heard that before.
And then it's close in. I mean, I could jump on the freeway and get to work on time because I got to get to work at 5 o'clock in the morning now. But it's always kind of close in, and until they started building that stadium, right in our neighborhood, which hasn't really been that much of an impact. But Smyrna. I've always liked it there.
All right.
I used to live in Grant Park, and I loved it down there. Dude. Back when I had a house in Grant Park, that
did
was
you,
fun.
Did you?
I took my bike everywhere there.
Did you sell before you could have been rich?
Oh, like, no.
Oh, you still sold at a good time?
I got good, yeah.
All right, up top for that.
Thank God. Nice.
All right.
I bought it in 95, and it was still kind of an iffy neighborhood.
Right.
The joke was you'd be sitting out, on your porch, and you couldn't tell if the Braves had won or if there was a shooting.
Right.
Because it was either fireworks or gunshot.
Right.
And then it turned out to be
a
really nice.
I live in the West End, so I get to experience that on an awesome almost daily basis.
Yeah, and so then
it's never the Braves, by the way.
Yeah, it's true.
It could be fireworks, but it's not the Braves.
And I sold in 2003.
All right, so you did okay.
Yeah, did really well. Yeah,
oh, good for you.
I bought a plane.
Get out.
I'm a pilot. Yeah.
Get out of here.
Yeah.
I'll have to have you back.
Absolutely.
Because I didn't. I had a friend. So I do these obstacle races. Have you heard of that?
Mm-mm. Like tell me.
Spartan, Tough Mudder.
Yeah.
Running over walls and fire. You've never heard of this thing?
Uh-huh.
You have or you haven't?
I've heard of the type of
okay. So
courses.
It's
and
my
races.
My other business is that.
Like an Ironman type of thing. But
sort of, but not really, but it doesn't matter. Okay. We can explain later. But I met a friend. You may know him. We can talk about him offline too. But he has a plane, mm-hmm. and he would fly us to races in Florida.
Oh, cool.
So we could leave at 7, run the race, come back by noon. And the thing that I realized about private, which was everything, is that it's not your own plane that's the best part. It's the before and after. There's no parking the car. There's mm-hmm. no checking the frickin' luggage.
Right.
There's no checking yourself.
Yep.
You get there and he goes, let's go.
Yep.
And you get on the plane.
Yep.
That is the hours of time
yes.
that you are saving.
Yes.
So yeah, I would love to talk to you about being a pilot and stuff. But yeah. Do you keep which airport does she live?
When I had the aircraft, I sold it a while back. But I had the aircraft for about maybe 5, almost 6 years. Did a restoration. That was kind of like my little hobby. So I bought it in a very very lonely field down in South Georgia. It was falling apart. It needed love, and I put my heart and soul and sweat and
right.
finances into it and restored it. And it was a beautiful little plane. And I work with one of my charities called Angel Flight. And we can talk about this at another time. But we provide medical flights for those who have transportation barriers. If they can't afford frequent transportation to and from a cancer center or something like that, we will pick up the flights for free.
Right.
We fly out of PDK mostly. I had my aircraft at McCollum, which is in Cobb County, when I had it there. And I was, I'm on the board of directors still for Angel Flight, and I was one of the most active pilots for a long time. And that's kind of where my passion for aviation kind of took me was into Angel Flight. So it was
cool.
It was fun.
One of the things I wanted to ask before you left.
Now I rent and I fly out of PDK.
So your actual name is Steve Craig.
It's my first and middle name.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, you don't have a wacky radio name.
Last name is Steakman.
Steakman?
Steakman. Yes.
Like the steak or STAK?
Like the vampire steak.
Steakman.
Yeah. Steakman. So there's a lot. And you mentioned S's a while back. There's Steve Steakman is a little too much.
So it's too much.
Yeah. So Steve Craig was just.
Is that
quick.
That good short?
Yeah. First and middle name.
Have you always had that? Like even when you're old days, you were never something else?
Yeah. Because that was the big thing back in the 70s is all disc jockeys had two, had like their first names were. Or their names were like two first names.
Right.
Like Mike Roberts.
Right.
Robert Michaels.
Right.
And then that kind of thing. So.
Right. Oh, no. Now I totally lost my train of thought. Nice Vans, by the way.
Thanks. One of my 32, yeah.
That you have 32 pairs of Vans?
I do.
That's your thing?
Yeah. That just kind of started organically. I like Vans because I grew up in them. being a Southern California skateboard kid, and they're just comfortable. And I've just always lived in Vans. And after a while, it's like, oh, here's a new commemorative pair. Here's a nice design. Here, I want to custom these. Right. And here's a nice Vans that put out some.
Well, you know, like the whole sneaker culture is like off the chain.
Mm-hmm.
Like I used to have an office in Little Five Points. And the first time there was a line outside of Wish, I literally didn't know why there was a line. And I said, excuse me, like, why is there a line here? And they said, oh, there's shoes going on sale.
Like the new Jordans or something.
And I said, what time does it open? And they were like, oh, it's on Friday morning. And this was like Wednesday morning at the time. And so, like, they were literally in line for 2 days.
Wow.
Oh, it's
that's crazy.
It's beyond insane.
Now, see, I would like to find either one-of-a-kind Vans. The two that I have that I think are very, well, they're very, very unique, are from a designer by the name of Tiki Tony on the West Coast. And he basically is an artist, but he's a tiki style artist. And he custom paints Vans.
Right.
And he did a couple of custom ones for me, which are awesome. I did wear them at Dragon Con when I was in, we always kick off Dragon Con. A whole bunch of my friends who come down from New York, we always kick it off at Trader Vic's, which is downstairs.
Right. And, so you were there this weekend?
A little bit, off and on. Yeah.
Okay.
Not as immersive as I would like to have gone in with my steampunk persona.
You have a steampunk persona?
I do.
Dude, we
Horatio is Captain Ignatius Poppin' Stooges.
We have to have
and he's a steampunk pilot. Now catch this. Ignatius Poppin' Stooges is his name.
So like
you can call me Iggy.
I was gonna say tribute
Iggy Poppin' Stooges. He's a dirigible pilot if you want to go with the actual character.
Right, a dirigible is like a blimp.
A blimp.
I always want to educate the dirigible. Audience.
Steampunk would be dirigible.
Right. Want to put that. So I totally should have you back. Because we can talk about a lot of stuff.
Anytime.
And I appreciate you being...
And I'm sorry to go on so many tangents.
It's typically how the show goes, okay, honestly. Good. Nick and I talk for way too long about way too many things.
Nick Tapp?
Yes.
I'm sorry.
I would like to meet English Nick, though. Can you make that happen?
I can make that happen, absolutely. He's got a lot because he does Middays for us at 97.1 The River. He was on... Rock 100 for a while. He was on 96 Rock. He had a little stint at 99X.
Oh, well, then we can talk everything.
And he's the host of Meddlesome over at...
I just learned about this. I want to go. I just learned about this Meddlesome.
This is awesome. I mean, and for those who don't know about Meddlesome, they do it like almost every night, it seems like, at the 10 High down at the old Dark Horse. And it's live band karaoke.
The Dark Horse is gone?
I guess. Is it upstairs? 10 High is downstairs. I just noticed the Dark Horse. But it's live band karaoke, and it's packed. It's really hard to get in there and actually get a slot.
Right.
Oh, yeah, because there's regulars. And if you come in and you want to do Bohemian Rhapsody, there's a guy who will stare you down.
No way, dude.
Oh, that's my song, dude.
That's my jam.
And but Nick hosts it. He does a couple songs on his own, and that's, an amazing venture for him, and it's hugely popular now. They ought to move it to a bigger venue.
First of all, I don't think Bohemian Rhapsody should be allowed. I think it should be like 4 minutes and under, don't you think, if you're going to do it?
Yeah,
it just
I agree.
Takes up too much.
I agree.
You shouldn't be able to do Stairway.
Exactly.
You shouldn't be able to do, what did you mention earlier, Welcome to the Machine.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, who wants to be bored with 7-minute karaoke?
Gosh. But there's some people who is like, why can't you pick a 2-minute song? It's just...
Right.
It's actually, but the band is very good. I mean, going into Meddlesome, the band is actually pretty good about making people look and sound good.
Of course, right?
Yeah.
So where can people, do you want people to find you on the social medias or?
Instagram, it's Radio Flyer Steve. And at The Steve Show on Facebook.
Okay.
It's always been The Steve Show, which was the name of my show at 99X.
Right.
Same thing with Twitter, is The Steve Show. But I started getting it. Somebody had The Steve Show on Instagram, and I got to find out who that is. But that's where I am.
And we can listen to you every day on the river?
Yes, between 6 and 10.
Or the river app, as English Nick
says.
The
river app. That's more New York. He is English, by the way. He's really English.
did Nick Tapp tell you that I wasn't sure?
No.
People ask?
Always people ask. They say, he's not really English. It's a fake accent. No,
Because it's so fucking strong.
I've seen his green card. I know.
Right. On the river app.
Yeah, the river app. He's a good guy, though. Yeah. I mean, a lot of us over there are just, we're still doing it with passion, which is good. Katie Kiley, of course, does afternoons for us, and she's been on Atlanta radio since 1981 or two.
Can you get me Katie Kiley?
I can get that too. Yeah.
I mean, because seriously, if you talk about like my childhood, like that's like you were mentioning, like you and her, like she starts off even earlier, right?
Yeah.
My middle school Van Halen days.
Yeah.
Right.
And then absolutely.
And she's probably going to be really bummed when I say that, but into you in my, you know, post high school day, like that's Atlanta radio for me.
Yeah. And even like 96 Rock, their heyday was an amazing heyday.
Oh, please. They were the kings.
Exactly. And when we came in, when 99X came in, we didn't knock them off at all. It was just a different type of music. They didn't really grab onto the grunge type of stuff for a while. But they were still playing a lot of the old classic rock. They were playing some of the newer stuff that was still coming out of like the late 80s. We were something completely different.
Right.
We looked at them as competition.
Right.
But it was more of a friendly competition. And I think Willard was another guy that I met over the years who was doing middays there, and he was kind of my competition. And we always had kind of a friendly competition, talking about certain things. And I'd be telling him about this new band called James, and he was going, "Yeah, but I'm playing Led Zeppelin." So we'd have like, you know, nice little conversations, you know, in and around just radio in general.
Right.
But I miss those days. I miss the 99X days because the passion that we was exhausting. It was an exhausting run for all of us when we were all finished and the station died. We were horrified that it ever happened. We were just sad. But then we had time to reflect and look back on what we did. You know, and all of us, and it goes into, you know, Steve Barnes and Jimmy Barron and Leslie Fram, who was the captain of the ship. I mean, she steered it through the entire run as our program director. Sean Demery, our music director, my dearest close friend since 1978. Axel, who's still down there now, and Will Pendarvis, Matt Jones. I'm going to forget names too, and all these guys. We all went and just had a time to sit and have beers and reflect. And I think at that point we realized that we did something really cool, and the way people responded to it was wonderful. And the way people still respond to it, whenever anything gets posted on social media that has our logo on it, or something that has, if it's a video clip of a concert they went to with a couple of our DJs up on stage introducing the band or whatever, people will just go, "Oh my God, I miss that station. I miss it so bad." And when people say they miss it, just know that we miss it too. Aww. I mean, and I'm going to get choked up in a minute.
I'm getting a little choked up.
We really, really do miss that passion and that closeness we had with everybody, because we were fortunate enough to have that before there was social media. You know, we kind of helped usher in the information age, but for a long time there, we were the information givers, and we took pride in that. And we went out and tried to find the cool stuff to do and say, "Hey, I just found out about this thing, or I found about this venue or this particular restaurant." And that was the fun, aside from introducing new music that we would come across too.
Well, aside from these kinds of conversations, is somebody keeping, like, is there an old social media profile where things get posted, or some fan, or does that exist? Because I might start that if nobody has.
Not really. Not that I really know of, no.
Not that I have any more time in my life, but it just seems like, because trust me, a lot of people would find it, you know?
Yeah. I did something a couple of years ago. I should do this again. I posted just on my Facebook page a picture of what I used to call the Christmasizer. Are you familiar with this?
Mm-mm.
The Christmasizer I would bring out around Christmas time, and I could basically turn any song, into a Christmas song. And all it was literally a stick with some sleigh bells on it that I got at like a Michael's or something. And so it literally looks like a club, but it's just a big long stick with jingle bells on it. And I would bring this into the studio, and kind of slightly off mic, I would just kind of do jingle bells to the rhythm of whatever song was playing, and it was Christmasized.
Right.
And so I actually held this thing up and took a picture of it, and I said, "Does anybody recognize this from the old 99X days?"
Right.
I had like 500 comments. It was like, "Oh my God, that's the Christmasizer. That's the Christmasizer. Oh my God, I want it. How much do you want for it?" It's like, maybe I should start putting some stuff on eBay. But stuff like that, you give them any piece of something 99X, and people respond to it. And that tells us that we did something good and we did something lasting. And it was, what, 16 years, 15, 16 years that we were all there. And none of us left. I mean, a few of us did. Will Pendarvis left early. But for the most part, we all were there for the whole run. And that's a testament to Atlanta, a testament to our listeners, a testament to the station and the people who were the higher ups at the time, that they made it a great environment. They made it fun. They let us do what we wanted to do, what we knew we could do. They trusted us with everything. And I just wish that some stations with maybe new alternative, if you want to call it that, or even classic alternative, would give somebody that chance to do it again. I think it would work actually as a classic alternative. If all you were to play, like you would for normal classic rock, when you're playing stuff from the 60s all the way through the 80s, if you're playing a station, or if you created a station that was a classic alternative station, and all you played was stuff from maybe the 79, 78 Ramones, Elvis Costello era, all the way through the cool new wave 80s, and then the 90s stuff, without any currents, without any new songs, just play that like you would a classic rock format, I think it would be huge. And if you did it in the same style as 99X did, I think that would be massive.
Well, why don't you and I start it like from your basement?
Well, there is a station out there. It's an HD station.
I don't know what that means.
It's the Rivers HD High Definition, or HD3. HD radio?
Right.
Yes, it's great technology that nobody knows about, and that's the problem with it.
Well, but that's kind of the deal, right? Like this whole Web 2.0 thing was that a lot of people made video content, but none of us could watch it.
Right.
Because the streams weren't fast enough. So exactly. It's okay to be ahead of the curve sometimes,
yes.
Right? You just have to wait.
And you have to have the ability to promote it and get people to know about it. The people who have discovered the station, it's called The Other Side of the River.
Oh, I've probably heard you talk about it.
Yeah. And it's...
Coming up on the other side of the river. No. Sorry.
No, I don't. I hope I don't puke. But it's our HD. It's 97.1 The River's HD3. So it's 97.1 HD3 if you have an HD radio. And you can also pick it up in Gwinnett. It's on 97.7, just on terrestrial tower radio.
Right.
Because we carry the Gwinnett Braves and also the Gwinnett Gladiators.
The G Braves, everybody. Gonna do a Home Depot giveaway with the G Braves, everybody.
And the Atlanta Gladiators. So we carry
I'm like totally night, a so. Natural, right? I know you're dying.
You can do it. Yeah. Sports broadcasting. And so, but that station is, and it's my little sandbox. It's just, I just took everything that 99X pretty much ever played, and I just put it in that Music Master program and let it crank out programming.
Why didn't you mention this earlier?
You didn't ask.
Well, I mean, we're pining away for these years, and you're like, oh, we can still get there today.
The music is there. The music is there. That's the only thing is the presentation is not there the way 99X used to be.
If I create a Facebook page and call it whatever we decide to call it, something with the word 99X in it, would you pimp it on your regular Facebook page?
Absolutely.
Okay, because we'll get people, trust
absolutely.
Me.
Absolutely, yeah. There's a couple fans who've done that. The pages are out there. I haven't seen any activity on them in the last couple of years.
Right, because it takes work.
Yeah.
As someone who does...
Most of them are just groups, though. Most of them are like group pages.
Oh, okay. But no, they take even a group, if it's not tended to and it just becomes like blog dumping grounds, they just die. So it's just hard. But we're getting way off. So I just want to say thank you for coming in.
Thank you very much for having me. And it's been a pleasure. And I just... Now you got me pining for it all. Now I kind of wish I was back in the middle of the 90s doing it all over again.
That is it, and that is all. Hope you enjoyed it. Hey, tell a friend. The Atlanta Podcast is now on iTunes and every other player you can think of. Also, you now can hear all the episodes. There was a minute there where, for some reason, we only got the most recent 10. Not for some reason. I know why. It was a setting. I fixed the setting. So if you're new to the show and you haven't heard those first couple, which include some of the most favorite, which is Kevin Gillespie, which is Ryan Gravel. Those are now available. Go back and listen to episodes 1, 2, and 3, which weren't there back until recently. Other than that, stay safe, everybody. I'm taking a trip, but I'll be bringing some more episodes to you. We don't want to miss a beat. All right. Love you, miss you, mean it. I gotta run.